In a world where filters, fillers, and followers dictate self-worth, LN Atlanta's Pixel Flesh arrives as a necessary disruption to our beauty-obsessed digital culture. This raw examination of modern beauty standards has become required reading among celebrities like Jamila Jamil and Florence Pugh, who praise its unflinching look at how social media has transformed women's relationship with their bodies. As TikTok's hashtag BookTok community propelled it to bestseller status, Atlanta's work resonates deeply with a generation raised on Instagram face and beauty filters, offering both validation and a roadmap for resistance in a culture that profits from women's insecurities. The modern beauty standard has evolved into something far more insidious than the glossy magazine spreads of previous generations. We now exist in a perpetual beauty panopticon, a digital prison where we constantly self-surveil and judge our appearances against increasingly unattainable standards. Atlanta's confessional opening sets the tone. "I'm increasingly unsure of what real even means," she admits, describing how bodies morph into cookie-cutter molds with razor-sharp edges in a world where everything is beautiful and nothing hurts. This transformation didn't happen by accident. Atlanta recounts her experience working at a beauty tech startup that initially positioned itself as empowering women entrepreneurs, but quickly evolved into something more sinister. What began innocently with nail art and hair services expanded to include aesthetic procedures, selling noses, lips, chins, and a super smooth forehead. During the company retreat after raising $4 million, she had a disturbing realization. Their algorithm was already doing what she'd imagined as a dystopian scenario, inciting mass insecurities in young women and encouraging them to modify their features according to fleeting trends. The beauty panopticon functions through constant comparison and the erasure of uniqueness in favor of trending catalog parts. "We've internalized this surveillance so thoroughly that we scrutinize previously unnoticed features like buccal fat and nasolabial folds, viewing ourselves as perpetual before pictures awaiting transformation." This self-surveillance extends beyond our physical bodies to our digital representations, creating a feedback loop of insecurity that benefits a $500 billion global beauty complex while harming women's mental health, financial stability, and sense of self. The result is a generation of women caught in beauty's spell, aware of their conditioning yet unable to break free. Even those who intellectually reject these standards find themselves booking filler appointments and obsessing over minute flaws. The beauty panopticon has become so pervasive that resistance feels not just difficult, but nearly impossible. Beauty standards have never existed in a vacuum. They reflect and reinforce power structures that benefit those at the top. For at least 2,000 years, Western beauty ideals have remained remarkably consistent. Alabaster white, defined curves, hairless, poreless, designed by men for male pleasure. Despite claims that standards constantly evolve, the spectrum has always excluded more than it includes, leaving no room for aging, cellulite, acne, body hair, dark skin, disability, or strong features. This consistency reveals beauty's true purpose: control. As John Berger noted, "Men look at women. Women watch themselves being looked at," a concept Laura Mulvey later termed the male gaze. Through this gaze, female bodies become territory without agency, resources to be consumed. Margaret Atwood described this perfectly. "You are a woman with a man inside watching a woman. You are your own voyeur." The male gaze creates a self-fulfilling prophecy where women become their own overseers. We perform femininity daily, applying makeup, wearing heels, apologizing profusely, creating an echo chamber that amplifies narrow beauty ideals. Digital culture intensifies this with continuous feedback loops, training women to discipline each other's bodies. Even a former viral sensation confessed, "Even when I'm crying, I'm wondering if my tears are falling beautifully. I'm holding my stomach in and arching my back, thinking about how I would look if someone captured me." The idea that women control their own image in digital culture is fantasy. From art masters who sculpted women to today's male-run tech monopolies, we remain subjected to wealthy white men's ideals. While the Kardashian-Jenners pose semi-nude without consequences, platforms censor marginalized bodies. As Naomi points out in an open letter to Instagram, if you are white, rich, and conventionally sexually attractive, it seems you can post as you wish. This beauty standard impacts all women differently. Studies show women with more followers feel increased pressure to monitor appearance, while men experience no such correlation. For trans women like Charlie Craggs, who spent $50,000 on transition-related procedures, beauty becomes fused with safety and acceptance. Despite this investment, she still mutes friends' Instagram accounts to avoid comparison. "I paid to look this way, so I know it isn't bad, but I'm so insecure." Personal spaces once served as crucial environments for identity development and self-expression, particularly for young people coming of age. These private domains allowed for authentic exploration of personality, creativity, and friendship formation. Before social media's dominance, bedroom walls became galleries of evolving interests and personal growth, with trusted companions invited to share in these meaningful experiences. The digital revolution, however, dramatically shifted these dynamics. The transition from innocent online photo sharing to exposure to inappropriate content on various platforms created new challenges for adolescent development. Young people increasingly encountered unwanted explicit material while platforms failed to provide adequate protections. Social conditioning began emphasizing appearance-based validation from an early age. Group activities started revolving around image creation and sharing, while media representations reinforced problematic messages about worth being tied to physical appearance. Popular culture often portrayed concerning power dynamics in relationships and social interactions. The social media era brought complex messages about empowerment through self-presentation. While some public figures promoted this as liberation, critics noted how it often reinforced existing beauty standards and societal privileges. Many found themselves caught between authentic self-expression and carefully curated presentations seeking external validation. As digital platforms evolved, content creation became increasingly monetized, bringing new pressures. Content creators describe extensive beauty routines, digital editing processes, and conformity to specific aesthetic standards. This often involves significant time investment in achieving prescribed appearances through various enhancement techniques. These developments reflect broader societal issues regarding body image, self-worth, and relationship dynamics. Research indicates concerning patterns in how young people develop their understanding of intimacy and personal value. The commercialization of personal expression has created complex challenges for authentic identity development and healthy self-image formation. On a Friday night in London's Piccadilly Circus, Sarah Bartman performed to sold-out crowds. Born in what is now South Africa in 1789 and enslaved at 16 after colonists murdered her father, Sarah was exhibited throughout Europe despite the passing of the Slave Trade Act. Known derogatorily as the Hottentot Venus, Sarah's image featuring her large backside, breasts, and lips went viral in the 19th century. Dehumanized and reduced to a spectacle, Sarah's body was used to inform reductive stereotypes of Black womanhood, her beauty consumed by white audiences for entertainment. This historical exploitation continues in modern beauty culture. Kim Kardashian's viral 2014 Paper magazine cover, nude, oiled, with an exaggerated posterior, echoed historical depictions of Sarah Bartman, shot by Jean-Paul Goudet, who once stated, "Blacks are the premise of my work." Unlike Bartman, Kim profits from features that kept Black women enslaved. Blackfishing describes white women adopting Black features through makeup, hairstyles, and surgical enhancements for financial gain. This has created an ethnically ambiguous beauty standard that appears diverse while maintaining racial hierarchy. For women of color, seeing their once derided features celebrated on white women is deeply traumatic. The economic disparities persist despite apparent increased diversity online. 76's Landmark Report revealed an 18.7% pay gap between white influencers and influencers of color in the UK, rising to 21.5% for black influencers. In North America, the gap reaches 35%. Charlotte Stavro notes brands will pay 25 to 30% less to dark-skinned influencers with African features compared to light-skinned ones with identical metrics. Women of color describe their traumatic early digital experiences, where racism intensified objectification through beauty hierarchies. From being called racial slurs in online games to seeing only white women represented on platforms like Tumblr, Pinterest, and YouTube, they learned that black was seen as inferior. As Sophia Noble details in Algorithms of Oppression, this colonization is embedded in the internet's code, with white male tech monopolies creating reductive images of women of color. Digital technology reinforces Eurocentric standards through skin brightening filters and camera optimization for white skin. The author describes the elaborate beauty rituals women undertake before social events, a multi-day process involving skin treatments, self-tanning, hairstyling, and extensive makeup application. These rituals represent significant investments of time. The average woman spends an hour daily on beauty prep and money, estimated $300,000 in a lifetime just on facial care. Despite these costs, beauty has always been women's work, simultaneously required and stigmatized. In our visual digital culture, beauty functions as currency and a path to social mobility. The author describes how she and other young women perform aesthetic labor at exclusive venues, compensated with free drinks and status for their appearance. They sit like a row of dolls on a shelf, providing value to venues through their beauty. Fellow clubgoers share stories of leveraging their looks. Leah, an unpaid fashion intern, and Nadia, a broke student, receive free meals at expensive restaurants and invitations to luxury events through their curated social media presence. The beauty standard has historically served the ruling class's ideological interests, with ugliness often linked to disability, queerness, race, and poverty. Though undemocratic in nature, beauty's impact is universal, forcing women to chase an elusive ideal just to feel human. This creates a vicious cycle, where economic privilege both enables beauty work and is generated by it, penalizing those who cannot participate financially or socially. The halo effect grants attractive people numerous advantages, from higher loan approval rates to better legal outcomes and career opportunities. However, it's not just natural beauty that's rewarded. The effort put into doing attractiveness appropriately yields even greater benefits. Studies show well-groomed but less attractive women earn more than attractive women who don't invest in beautification, revealing beauty standards as mechanisms for controlling women's behavior through rewarding conformity. Beauty's value is deeply entangled with class inequalities, ageism, ableism, racial prejudices, and colonial impacts, making it unequally accessible. A paradox exists where women must appear naturally beautiful while concealing their beauty work, as admitting effort diminishes perceived beauty. This creates a social divide where beauty treatments can either elevate or diminish status depending on execution and class context. Young women consistently describe beauty work as an investment, a narrative reinforced by cosmetic companies' marketing procedures as empowering tools for confidence and social advancement. However, this framing is problematic, since much beauty work is considered mandatory for women's basic femininity rather than optional capital enhancement. Despite facing economic disadvantages, including student debt, lower incomes, and fewer assets than previous generations, millennials outspend baby boomers 2-to-1 on beauty, self-care, and wellness. Dismemberment has followed women throughout history, from Sarah Bartman's preserved body parts to modern beauty culture. As girls, we fragmented ourselves through waiting games, assigning numerical values to individual body parts. The internet amplified this with hot or not websites. Research shows women describe their bodies as collections of flawed parts needing fixing, while men view theirs as whole, functional units. When asked about their bodies, every man in a University of Sussex study described what their body could do, while women assessed themselves purely as decorative objects. At 13, I remember hating my stomach with visceral intensity. the concertina of flesh between hips and chest, the way it folded when I bent. I scrutinized it in the bath, wishing I could cut chunks away. I couldn't understand why my middle looked different from women on screens, why it needed to bend at all. Like a frog in slowly heating water, I didn't realize I was cooking myself in self-hatred. 15-year-old girls stand before a gilded mirror, each criticizing different body parts: hips, calves, shoulders, hairline, pores, nail beds. Beautiful yet dissatisfied, they perform the ritual of self-critique, expecting newcomer Caddy to join in their body hatred ceremony. When Caddy only mentions bad morning breath, she breaks the social order. Women are expected to hate permanent aspects of themselves, not temporary, fixable problems. Cosmetic surgery has exploded globally, with procedures increasing 20% between 2015-2019. The industry blurs definitions, what counts as surgery, allowing celebrities to deny procedures through technicalities. Originally developed for reconstructive care after wartime injuries, plastic surgery now predominantly serves women, 94% of patients, while 90% of surgeons are men, creating bodies that both are and aren't women's own. The Brazilian butt lift defined 2010's beauty culture, transforming from Jennifer Lopez's early influence to mainstream obsession after Kim Kardashian's 2014 Paper magazine cover broke the internet. Between 2015-2019, BBL procedures increased by 90%, becoming the world's fastest-growing cosmetic surgery by 2021. Egypt Rodriguez, 27, spent over $15,000 on two BBLs within 3 months in 2018, inspired by Miami billboards and Nicki Minaj. Despite its popularity, the BBL remains one of the deadliest cosmetic procedures, with a 2017 mortality rate of 1 in 3,000, yet thousands still travel to Turkey, Miami, and the Dominican Republic for cheaper options. Drawing on Donna Haraway's Cyborg Manifesto, the author examines how technology, rather than liberating women, has trapped them in endless reconstruction. The Kardashians represent the ultimate beauty cyborgs, fusing fiction with nonfiction, technology with flesh, creating an uncanny valley effect that simultaneously inspires imitation and discomfort. Under capitalism, our bodies extend beyond skin boundaries through prosthetic technologies and accessories, leaving us in perpetual flux, never complete, always consuming. This endless makeover culture fragments women into parts to be continually upgraded, raising the question, are we enhanced or sold for parts? In our digital age, influencers have become modern deities, with followers offering sacrificial likes and creating shrines to these online personalities. Eleanor Barnes, known online as Snitchery, embodies this phenomenon as a beauty influencer with over 1 million followers. Her transformation from Virginia woman to digital goddess illustrates how reality has shifted into curated content. The digital realm has erased the once clear boundary between Hollywood fantasy and everyday reality. We now carry the tools to augment ourselves everywhere, constantly able to edit, filter, and curate our appearance. Research shows 80% of girls use filters or editing apps by age 13, with 67% hiding at least one body part before posting online. At youth organizations, 10-year-olds proudly display albums of filtered selfies, while 13-year-olds confess to avoiding leaving home because they aren't pretty enough in real life. We exist perpetually on the precipice of digital fame, our real lives increasingly filtered through the lens of potential content. The digital realm offers connection yet demands aesthetic conformity, creating an exclusionary system where we're categorized into algorithmic subsets easily targeted by advertisers. Despite appearing as expressive tools, social platforms function as algorithmic oracles, exerting control over our identities, transforming us into ideal consumers regardless of which aesthetic we choose. When an unfiltered photo of Khloe Kardashian in a leopard print bikini went viral, she fought desperately to remove it from the internet despite widespread praise for its natural beauty. The stark contrast between this candid image and her typically CGI-enhanced photos revealed a troubling truth. Even those with unlimited beauty resources cannot live up to their own digitally perfected standards. Chloe's response, posting videos in flattering lighting, and defending her right to present herself the way I want to be seen, embodied our collective digital paradox. She simultaneously demanded acknowledgement of her humanity while refusing to be seen as merely human. AR filters have become ubiquitous digital accessories, with 600 million monthly users on Instagram and Facebook and 76% of Snapchat users applying filters daily. From perfect face to skinny filter, these tools have evolved from obviously playful to subtly transformative, allowing users to reshape facial features, whiten teeth, and slim bodies. What's most concerning isn't the obvious beauty filters, but the covert, subtle tweaking that's become standard practice. The internet is freakishly curated right now, Eleanor explains. There's an illusion people are editing less, but they're just editing more meticulously, creating something that looks effortless and natural. Beyond competing with filtered versions of ourselves, we now face virtual influencers like Little Mikella, a forever 19-year-old biracial digital creation who models for luxury brands like Burberry and Chanel. Unlike real women influencers, Mikella never ages, has bad skin days, or burns out. She represents a disturbing trend where women's bodies become literal property to be manipulated at will. What's particularly concerning is how many prominent virtual influencers are women of color. This artificial diversity allows brands to present an illusion of inclusivity without actually hiring or paying real women of color. In this intimate chapter, Alana explores the toxic relationship between digital culture and eating disorders through her friendship with Chloe, a magnetic, dark-haired beauty with a sharp aesthetic who, like so many women, battles disordered eating. Chloe reveals how she once idolized Tumblr-famous girls, creating physical mood boards of thin women like Alexa Chung and Kate Moss, then meticulously copying their lifestyles. As Chloe grew thinner, her social media following exploded to 80,000 by age 17. Her posting schedule became intertwined with her eating disorder. She wouldn't eat before photo shoots and only allowed herself meals after taking pictures, a pattern she maintained for 3 years. Ironically, many of Chloe's viral photos featured her posing with food she wouldn't actually eat. "I have so many pictures of me holding food like it's holy," she explains, including images cradling baguettes like a baby, despite hating bread. When you starve a brain, you become obsessive and detail-oriented while losing the ability to see the bigger picture. Concentration falters, memory worsens, and creativity diminishes. Parts of your organs begin to die. Your brain literally shrinks. "The brain needs about 400 to 500 calories daily just for itself," explains therapist Olivia Rowe. "A starved brain becomes lazy without proper nutrients, finding it difficult to problem solve or think flexibly." Chloe now wonders what she might have become without her eating disorder. "I wanted to be an aero engineer. I was so good at maths," she reflects, before abandoning these ambitions once she discovered the easier thrill of online validation. Every moment became an image to capture and analyze, leaving her disconnected from reality. "I always feel watched. Am I actually me, or am I just performing?" Throughout my eating disorder, I could convince myself I had made it all up. "I'm not actually ill, I'm just doing a bit." Pro-eating disorder content has flourished online since the internet's early days. In 2001, Yahoo removed 113 pro-anorexia websites, and in 2012, Tumblr banned Thinspiration blogs following media exposure. Yet, despite decades of awareness, today's social media platforms still struggle with the same issues. While major platforms officially prohibit content promoting self-harm and eating disorders in their terms of service, enforcement remains inconsistent. TikTok particularly excels at creating harmful echo chambers, with its algorithm quickly learning to serve increasingly extreme content that keeps users engaged. The societal obsession with thinness isn't an aberration, but a reflection of how women are conditioned to take up less space. Studies show that behaviors enhancing female attractiveness include eating smaller meals, with self-starvation becoming an extension of the self-sacrifice expected of women in all aspects of life. This self-denial represents duty and virtue through suffering, essentially self-policing on behalf of patriarchy. The internet is filled with women terrified of aging, exemplified by viral content creator Isabel Lux. At 32, she posts videos featuring herself crying over her age while maintaining an extremely youthful appearance through meticulous anti-aging routines. Her content has inspired countless young women to fear the passage of time, with teenagers lamenting birthdays and wasting time before they've even reached adulthood. While women throughout history have pursued youth preservation, from Cleopatra's donkey milk baths to Elizabethan raw meat facials, today's anti-aging obsession targets increasingly younger women with invasive preventative regimes. The digital age demands skin without texture, pores, lines, or wrinkles. No evidence of humanity. Young girls are growing up with filtered images from childhood, transforming themselves into unreal beings while fearing natural aging. The statistics are alarming. In 2012, fewer than 20% of U.S. women aged 18 to 24 considered anti-aging skincare important. By 2018, over 50% wanted wrinkle-defying products. Social media amplifies this message, with viral videos featuring 14-year-olds sharing extensive anti-aging routines started at age 12, including retinol, face masks, and sunscreen rituals. Ray Bradbury wrote that a witch is born out of the true hungers of her time. Between the 15th and 17th centuries, thousands of women were persecuted as witches, a term used against marginalized, promiscuous, queer, self-sufficient, single, difficult, older, disabled, and wise women. Many were midwives and healers with knowledge of reproduction that threatened patriarchal power. In the digital age, women who dare to be visible face similar persecution. Online abuse creates a hostile environment for women in politics and journalism, with UNESCO finding Black, Indigenous, Jewish, Arab, and lesbian women journalists experiencing the most severe impacts. As Diane Abbott notes, why should you have to pay that price for being in the public space? The result threatens democracy itself, deepening gender inequality and silencing diverse voices. The author's vision of liberation from beauty standards is a world where she eats without guilt, moves for joy rather than appearance, doesn't know her weight, feels beautiful authentically, and lives without self-loathing. She argues that collective action and sorority are the true answers to beauty culture's problems. We cannot expect individual women to shoulder patriarchal burdens alone, but together we can make them lighter. Approaching her 28th birthday with the return of indie sleaze fashion, Atlanta has now lived long enough to see her once bullied body become stylish again. Though beauty pressures remain constant, the turmoil that once paralyzed her has become a faint oscillation as she's formed her own core in the eye of the storm. She doesn't pretend beauty is unimportant, but she's working to reduce its dominance in her life. We must collectively relegate beauty to the background of our lives, the elevator music, not the motor. We can begin reprogramming our brains to stop tying worth to aesthetic value by appreciating ourselves as humans rather than commodities. Research shows focusing on what our bodies can do rather than how they look creates the happiest data we've ever seen in the lab, according to Dr. Renee Englin, author of Beauty Sick. Women who practice this mindset actually felt better about their appearance, creating protection against future negative thoughts. To build a better future for women, we need more women in STEM, founding tech companies, and regulating these industries. We need more women in politics, investment, journalism, and research. When companies prioritize profit over people and lack diverse representation, women suffer. It's not enough to have more seats at the table. We must question how the table itself is constructed. This transformation begins with nurturing girls from day one, ensuring they're properly nourished, protected online, and raised to value their intelligence over appearance.